KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you, our good friend and the boss of me, Steve Ryman, on vacation. Happy 4th to everybody. Love Independence Day. Love our country. Paul Gessing is our special guest today, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Of course, as a listener, you know that Paul does a lot of things for the state of New Mexico, and the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, the mission of his organization is to promote liberty and prosperity for all New Mexicans by educating citizens on the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. And what I appreciate about you, Paul, is that you have more ideas and more well-researched positions pretty much than anyone else that I know. I mean, there's other people that do the type of work that you do, but I really appreciate the hard work you put in into the bibliography and all the different resources that you make available to us as we read about all the things that you, your policies. Errorsofenchantment.com is an amazing blog. Why New Mexico is not realizing its potential. I didn't realize that was part of the what you called that. I've always known it as Errors of Enchantment, but that was brought to my attention today. RioGrandeFoundation.org is your website. But I think most of what we're going to talk about today is actually from your errorsofenchantment.com, so people can get much more detailed information. Paul, you're getting ready to leave for a nice vacation, and that's going to be in the heart of the United States in Washington, D.C. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, family trip to the D.C. area. My wife and I met in the D.C. area. I was working for the National Taxpayers Union back there at the time, and just getting ready to see the fireworks on the National Mall and see some of the sights and sounds around D.C. With a few additional trips built in, but very exciting to show the children some of those things. I did work in the D.C. area for 8.5 years, similar to the Rio Grande Foundation, except more on a national basis. And I also was what they call a resident assistant, not for college or anything, but for an internship program. One of my jobs was to plan various excursions to sites around the D.C. area. So I think they have a pretty good tour guide for their trip to the D.C. area. That is my children, you know, because I had to come up with, you know, everybody knows, obviously, you're D.C., you go to the Smithsonian, you go to the Capitol, you go to the Washington Monument, Lincoln, Vietnam veterans, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a few sites that not everybody checks out when they get to the D.C. area, like the Washington National Cathedral. It's where they have a lot of, I think Jimmy Carter was the last big funeral there at the National Cathedral. It's a Gothic style cathedral in Northwest DC. And if you go online, I'm not kidding about this, but they have gargoyles. They may have a different name, but basically yeah, they're gargoyles. One of them is Darth Vader. They have a Darth Vader mask,
right,
in the National Cathedral. Yeah, because this is a old style, but modern church that is there in the D.C. area. So some really unique things to see, and we'll see if we can spot old Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker when we're there with the kids. But yeah, looking forward to seeing all that stuff.
Paul, when you talk about liberty and prosperity, how do you define liberty?
Well, you can define liberty in two primary ways. One is individual liberty or social liberty. And we do support aspects of that, but our work is around the ideas of economic liberty. We, of course, support free speech. We support the U.S. Constitution. Our work is here in New Mexico, mostly at the legislative and local levels, where we work to research, and that's what makes us unique, is that we're a research-based organization. We're nonpartisan. We focus on those economic freedom issues. Education freedom, which I see as a part of the economy, of course, the Constitution. So we support your First Amendment right to free speech. Hopefully people know most of the amendments, if not all of them, as we approach Independence Day. Certainly the Second Amendment as well, and others, including the right to be free from seizing your personal effects, right to privacy in that way. So those are part of the 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, but we support all of those and the economic freedoms that New Mexicans need, quite frankly, need more of in this state.
I love it. Let's start with some of the topics you cover in errorsofenchantment.com, E-R-R-O-R-S. Of enchantment.com, errorsofenchantment.com. Really very informative. One of the first ones we'll talk about is your opinion piece on Arizona policy. And basically what you discuss is some business and political leaders from New Mexico recently visited Arizona to learn about the strategies. I love how you mentioned in your notes on the show today, you could have saved him a trip. What was that trip all about?
Well, so we have local leaders who are seeing the successes of states surrounding us. And you could pick a state. You could, Denver's struggling in some ways right now, but still they've seen massive population growth and some really positive things in terms of their wealth and prosperity in the state of Colorado as a whole. And it's worth noting that, you know, again, getting to the Constitution, we live in a federalist system. The states are the primary actors when it comes to economic policy. So when we focus on these issues, our primary thrust is in the legislature. But of course, in New Mexico, the legislature either meets for 30 days or 60 days, and that is long past. So this group is headed to Phoenix to see some various things about what Phoenix did and has done and why that city is so much more successful than Albuquerque. And unfortunately, I think they're starting their journey on an incorrect premise. They were looking at plans to perhaps bring a branch campus of the University of New Mexico to downtown Albuquerque. Now, if you know anything about Albuquerque, you know that UNM is very, very close already to downtown Albuquerque. So the reason that this was a big deal in Arizona is because Arizona State is technically in Tempe. Tucson is where the University of Arizona is. So I guess they in Arizona put a branch campus of Arizona State in downtown Phoenix, and that had some positive impacts. I'm not privy to what was done or not done. But what I told people is that the real reason that Arizona and Phoenix do better than Albuquerque and New Mexico is because of state public policies. Now, we can, and I would gladly talk to you about the mayoral election, and we'll talk a little bit about how we're engaging in that here in the city of Albuquerque. But a few snippets, a few data points. For example, Arizona's top personal income tax rate, it's 2.5%. That is less than half the top rate in New Mexico at 5.9%. Arizona is a right-to-work state. Now, long story short, that simply means that you don't have to join a union as a precondition of employment. The Supreme Court addressed that nationwide several years ago for public employees, but we still have forced unionism in New Mexico. Arizona does not for private sector employees. Arizona has a higher sales tax rate than much of New Mexico at 8.38%, but they don't have a gross receipts tax, which inherently taxes small businesses and has an effect called pyramiding, where you're paying taxes on top of taxes. Arizona has no state-level prevailing wage law. I drive over here, and inevitably, many of the roads that I drive on are in terrible shape, and New Mexico has been judged by national studies to have bad roads, which wasn't the case when I moved here 15, 20 years ago. New Mexico had good roads. Those have deteriorated dramatically. Prevailing wages are artificial increases in the wage rates on public works projects. Arizona does not have that law. New Mexico has one that is very high and aggressive. Their labor force participation rate is significantly higher in Arizona. That just means that you have more people in the workforce paying taxes. You know, it's one of the ways you can increase tax revenue is by having more people work and less people on government programs. Doesn't mean everybody needs to work. Obviously, stay-at-home moms and parents, that's a different situation. But we have a lot of people in New Mexico that we subsidize to stay at home watching TV, playing video games, and probably doing things like drugs. Arizona has 10 companies listed on the Fortune 500. Two of those are relatively commonly known here in New Mexico. Freeport-McMoRan, big mining company. They have a mine actually down near Silver City, copper mine. And Carvana, a lot of folks are aware of Carvana's, you know, essentially model of selling cars. Now, they have a total of 10 over there in Arizona. How many do we have in New Mexico? Zero. PNM is by far and away the largest publicly traded company in New Mexico, but they're in the process of potentially being sold. And then Arizona is a nationwide leader in school choice, K-12 education. We don't need to discuss any further New Mexico's abysmal ratings, but we're dead last in the NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress. And New Mexico spends 45% more per student on K-12 than Arizona. Finally, Arizona spends a lot less on higher education. We talk about bringing a branch campus down to downtown Albuquerque. Aside from whether I think that's a good idea or not, which I don't think so. If you've been to downtown Phoenix, you know it's a lot more vibrant than downtown Albuquerque. Setting aside the fact that UNM's just a mile or two up the hill from downtown Albuquerque. But New Mexico spends $18,754 per higher education full-time student. Arizona spends $6,571 per higher ed student. Just mind-blowing. I mean, tripling the number here in New Mexico via relative to Arizona.
And are their fourth grade reading and eighth grade math scores better than New Mexico?
Every state in the country is better than New Mexico. And Arizona, which of course has a lot of the same demographics and challenges as New Mexico, they have large tribal areas like the Navajo Reservation, which is actually dominant on the Arizona side relative to New Mexico. They have many of the same issues. Arizona is by no means the highest performing state in the nation, but they do much better with what they have, both financially and in terms of student outcomes, thanks to their really nation-leading.
But Paul, the numbers you just mentioned are their cost per student is a third.
Yeah.
Of what it is in New Mexico.
Now, we supposedly have free college here in New Mexico, which you can argue, and we would argue that that is not a particularly wise investment. What it really comes down to is that New Mexico tends to solve its problems. Solve, I use that in air quotes, by throwing money at the issue. Why is that? Well, believe it or not, we have a lot of natural advantages that Arizona doesn't have. The biggest one is oil and gas. We have the Permian Basin. We have the Four Corners. Arizona has minimal oil and gas. We're the number two producer in the country, only to Texas. We have $61 billion we're sitting on as a state. Arizona has very, very little oil and gas at all within the entire state of Arizona. And yet, they do all these things better than us. And beat the debt drum. This is, in essence, what the Rio Grande Foundation really stands for and means, which is that public policies matter. They drive outcomes. They drive real results, whether it's with our children and the outcomes that they have, or the population of New Mexico, which is stagnant relative to Arizona, economic prosperity and growth. All of these things, we need a significant change in our approach. Putting new branch campuses downtown, tax increment financing, a business improvement district, none of that is going to move the needle. We need to change Santa Fe first, foremost, and always.
Last question for this segment. When this is true, do you, as a nonpartisan organization, acknowledge when people, regardless of their party, have a good idea?
Absolutely. Now, New Mexico has been one-party dominant for the better part of 100 years, but the situation politically in New Mexico has grown increasingly off kilter and unequal in its balance. The progressives have taken over the Democratic Party of New Mexico, and we see nationwide that the progressive left has grown to dominate Democratic Party politics. Zoran Mondami up in New York, where he's expected to win the mayorship, is only the latest indicator of this. I would put Deb Haaland, who's running for governor of New Mexico, in the category of extreme progressive, almost socialist, even communist. And I don't think Deb Haaland identifies as such, but Mondami certainly does. And it's just an indicator that we have come a very, very long and tragic way on the Democratic side. It doesn't mean that I agree with everything that President Trump or the Republicans do in New Mexico, but boy, when you're talking about real communist, real socialist, yes, there are other people in the Democratic primary for governor, Sam Bregman, Ken Miyagashima. Those are more of the voices that harken back to Bill Richardson, who was a pretty market-driven individual when it came to New Mexico and Democratic Party politics. Had some corruption issues, no question about that, but at least he saw the need and saw the value in developing the private sector economy. I think it's safe to say that Michelle Lujan Grisham, our current governor, and certainly Deb Haaland, do not value the private sector as they should. And Lujan Grisham's been propped up. She's benefited from the oil and gas industry that she doesn't care for much, but she's not ready to outright kill through policy at the state level. I fear that Deb Haaland, uniquely among the Democrats and, quite frankly, Republican candidates for governor, would be more interested in outright destroying the oil and gas industry that really funds this state and its economy.
Paul Gesing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. He's going to be with us till 2 o'clock today. We hope you'll join us as we take this quick break. Go to riograndefoundation.org. That's RIOGRANDE foundation.org, or go to errorsofenchantment.com. As we go through these topics, you'll be able to, they're indexable, and you can find all of these comments. There's a bibliography on most of these. There's quite a bit of background information, and I think you'll at least be able to start the discussion in your own mind about these various issues. In addition to these websites, the Rio Grande Foundation provides other resources, including frequent speakers that they bring to town. So when we come back, we're going to talk about one, Matt Mitchell, coming to town and what he had to say. More with Paul Gesing right after these messages.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Thanks to Tayshaun Begay engineering our show today. Sometimes I think Paul Tayshaun back in the control booth wants to strangle me because I'm always talking while we're taking breaks, and we have our sponsors being acknowledged. But I think he fears sometimes that we're going to talk right through the intro. But Tayshaun, thanks for your signal. I appreciate that very much. Paul, talk to us among the other resources, and I'll mention them again, riograndefoundation.org. Rio Grande, I want to emphasize there's an E there.
Yeah.
Riograndefoundation.org is your main website. And then you have errorsofenchantment.com, why New Mexico is not realizing its potential. Very thorough, documented articles. But in addition to that, you're bringing in speakers frequently. Tell us about your recent visit from Matt Mitchell.
Yeah, we have a luncheon series, and I would just make the plea at this point. If you are not signed up for our email list, please go to either riograndefoundation.org or errorsofenchantment.com. And you can feel free to make a tax-deductible donation if you're inclined to do that. But at least if you sign up for our email alerts, you will get information on our speakers that we have throughout the year. Matt Mitchell was our third speaker of 2025, and it was a unique occasion because so many of our speakers come from out of state. That's just the way it is. New Mexico is a relatively small state. Most political professional types don't live here in New Mexico. If they do, they're probably talking about a lot of the same exact things that I talk about. So Matt Mitchell is unique. He was born and raised here in New Mexico, did some academic research and study out of state, but after doing some work with the Rio Grande Foundation and then getting a job with a group called the Fraser Institute, a Canadian free market think tank. Yes, that is a real thing. For those of you who think the land of the North is all a bunch of socialists, there's a free market strain up there in Canada, and it's Fraser, F-R-A-S-E-R. So Matt happens to live in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and we've reconnected at some conferences relating to the Fraser Institute's work on economic freedom. And they do a number of excellent reports. They compare countries internationally. So the United States, how does it stack up against other nations around the world? And what are the trend lines in economic freedom? And this all goes back to Milton Friedman and his ideas and his input in helping get this going. So the pedigree here is awesome. You know, anytime you talk about Milton Friedman, it says, yes, sign me up. So they also do a Economic Freedom of North America Index, in which they compare Canadian provinces, U.S. states, and even Mexican states and areas like Puerto Rico on economic freedom. But then they distill that further to actually just compare the 50 states. And that's where we brought Matt in to talk about New Mexico being the only state in the country to have seen a decline in economic freedom since 1981. We're not talking about a small sample size here. That's a pretty good chunk of time when you're talking about economic policy data. We've seen a drop in that economic freedom, and we've seen, unfortunately, New Mexico stagnant with our poverty rate, our economic situation. And just a overall population growth is minuscule in the state of New Mexico. And when you look at states that are surrounding us, you know, this is, of course, the American Southwest, the place that many, many people want to be in and have moved to over a long span of time. Arizona's moving, you know, growing very fast. I was in Salt Lake City recently. Holy cow. Salt Lake City and Utah are growing fast. Denver, again, some problems there, but Colorado's grown very fast in recent years. Even Texas, where, you know, I'll take New Mexico's weather. I mean, it's nice and cool outside right now as we sit here and talk. Texas, I don't think I want to spend many Junes and Julys hanging out in Dallas, or let alone Houston or San Antonio. We have advantages over these places, but because our policies are unfriendly to business and individuals, we have fallen by the wayside. So Matt talked about that. His slides are available at our website. He also did an interview with KKOB, Bob Clark, when he was in town, and you can access that. I did a podcast with Matt at Tipping Point, New Mexico, and it was unique because more often than not, our national speakers are coming in, and they have limited experience and knowledge about New Mexico. They may have read the Rio Grande Foundation's work, or they may have a bit of information, but Matt could talk about the culture, the green chili, the history, the unique aspects that make New Mexico, New Mexico, and also the things that we need to look at changing in order to really take this state to a better place. And it's all about the things that we talk about: economic freedom, individual liberty.
Paul, the problems you address, are they so large that these problems are not solvable? Or could we? I'm going to talk to you like you're a coach.
Sure.
Okay. Look, I played college basketball, high school athletics, various sports. And I remember, you know, there were people that were atheists and people that were Christians. And we even had Muslims and people that were LDS, et cetera. That we're all part of a team and we all had a common goal and we had a brotherhood. We worked together. We accomplished a lot. We won championships. We did all kinds of things together. I don't even know if we can get Christian Catholics, Christian evangelicals to go to the polls and vote. How do we get people to get to the polls and get involved?
Well, part of that, not all of it, but part of it, the role the Rio Grande Foundation plays is trying to arm we the people, the citizens, with this information, and hopefully they will get out to vote and understand that they really hold the future of New Mexico in their hands when they do vote, because there are moderate Democrats, there's Republicans, moderates, and conservatives alike, and then there's the far left progressive socialists, and unfortunately they are ascendant right now, and those are the people that we quite frankly do battle with. Again, it doesn't mean that everybody else is always doing the right thing, but you get good ideas from these different folks on occasion, and sometimes we have to point out the error of their ways, and we're glad to do that and do it aggressively, but in a principled, straightforward, and simple way. So yeah, I hope people engage with these ideas, consider what they think about them. For example, you know, one of the big ones that we've been talking about for several years now is that New Mexico is in the midst of this massive oil and gas boom. We have a lot of money flowing into the state. How much of that money is flowing out to we the people? Our preference would be in the form of tax reduction that'll put New Mexico in a better light nationally so that we're more competitive for businesses and people to consider moving and coming here. We obviously need to do a lot on our education system to make that function and or bring choice and individual control to the education system to improve upon that. Public safety, central issue, but we certainly have and continue to talk about that when it comes to, for example, the city of Albuquerque election, as well as judicial elections that happen in this state on a regular basis. Every really 4 years, we get a lot of judges on the ballot.
Biggest city in New Mexico is Albuquerque. Right now, there are several mayoral candidates that you want to talk about in this show.
Yeah. And again, we don't endorse candidates. What we do is, in this case, a couple of different things. We analyze the makings of this race. There's seven candidates running for mayor of Albuquerque, and there's several school board elections, city council elections. Now, some people may not be in APS district, or they may think they're in the city, but they're not because they're in the unincorporated areas. They live in Rio Rancho or Sandoval County or even Los Ranchos de Albuquerque, et cetera. But these two big areas that we're talking about, if you're within the sound of my voice, there's a good chance you could be voting in that election this November. So it's important to be aware of what's happening because the city of Albuquerque has a lot of challenges. So we have done is sat down to have long-form conversations on our podcast with, right now, we're up to three candidates for mayor. We've talked to Eddie Varela, Mayling Armijo, and I recently talked to Daniel Chavez. All of those folks are running for mayor. And we've also sent out candidate surveys that we've asked everybody running for mayor for their views on what we consider to be some really critical issues. And I'll briefly go through that. You can go right now. The most recent candidate to have filled that out is Daniel Chavez, because just had him on the podcast as well. And that's released today if it's not out already. But you can find these questions and the answers that all of the candidates have given, I'm sure, by Googling or just going to Errors of Enchantment. But real quick, one, will you pledge to oppose any and all tax increases in the city? The budget's gone from from $750 million when Keller took over to $750 million to $1.5 billion under Keller.
So the budget is doubled.
Doubled under this current mayor. So taxes also went up when he took off. So we oppose tax increases. The second is, will you support amending the city charter to require a referendum, that means a vote of the citizens, before adopting tax increases? So essentially saying, hey, the citizens of Albuquerque should have a right to vote on a tax increase. Will you work to eliminate the city of Albuquerque's taxpayer-funded so-called free buses, which I believe have increased crime in this city? Should the city of immigrant friendly, and that's one that I've got people on both sides that I have people arguing on both sides, and so it's a really interesting topic
discuss. You term it immigrant friendly.
That's what they term it. So okay, we're using their language, and it's not technically sanctuary city from what I understand. Now, I am not an immigration expert. It involves the information that is shared between local law enforcement and ICE or Immigration and Customs. So it is what's called immigrant friendly. And, you know, it's a simple question. Do you support keeping that in place or not keeping it in place? Then we ask for a few more like essay questions. How would you increase the supply of housing in the city of Albuquerque? In a sentence or two, describe how you'd address Albuquerque's homeless situation. What are your priorities for reducing crime? Should the city of Albuquerque raise its minimum wage? And if so, what should that wage rate be? Should we repeal our project labor agreements, which increase the price of labor on public works? And finally, should Albuquerque ban plastic bags, yes or no? So that's our 10 questions. Pretty straightforward. Obviously, we know crime, homelessness, those are overwhelmingly huge issues in this city, but we do believe that some of those economic data points are really worth hashing out and having these mayoral and council candidates on the record. So check that out on Heirs of Enchantment, riograndefoundation.org.
Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, will be with us for two more segments. We hope you'll stay right here. Lots of background information. We have, 13 questions. We're going to get to six of them. But that's why I want to direct everybody to heirsofenchantment.com and riograndefoundation.org, because there's just a lot of resources, great way to be educated. And not that I'm asking you to agree with everything Paul says, but it's going to give you a basis, and you're going to know what questions to ask of candidates, and you're going to know what to look at from other policymakers and be able to compare the two. And I think more often than not, you're going to find that Paul's extensively researched everything that he does. We'll be back with more from Paul right after this.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Paul Gessing in studio this afternoon on ABQ Connect. I'm Jim Williams. I'm sitting in for Steve Ryman. Steve's taking a well-deserved vacation, and we hope that he is safe, and I hope all of you are safe and enjoy this Independence Day celebration tomorrow especially. Paul, you're going to be all the way in Washington, D.C. on the Mall watching fireworks. That kind of sounds like a cool deal.
Yeah, we'll be watching from Arlington right up the hill, and have the monuments and the Capitol all lined up in front of us as the fireworks go off. It should be a really neat event.
Sounds great. Well, as we talk about Washington, you've got the big, beautiful bill and its passage in the news. Talk to us about how that's going to affect New Mexico.
Well, first and foremost, it is worth noting that the world is not coming to an end, at least not thanks to this big, beautiful bill. As you might interpret things from our governor and our congressional delegation. And of course, the reality is that, you know, why I talk about progressives and their increasing role in the Democratic Party, really all of our congressional delegation, our governor, and a bulk of our legislature are so-called progressives, and they tend to be the ones we're most ideologically on the opposite sides from. So this big, beautiful bill, it has been passed narrowly in the House, a different version passed through the Senate, and we're still waiting to see what the final parameters are, because there were some very significant policy differences between the House and Senate, and neither of them passed by anything but the slimmest of margins. The House was a one-vote majority, as well as the Senate, where J.D. Vance, the vice president, had to break a 50-50 tie. But the thing that I definitely like to talk about most is the spending reduction aspect of this bill, because the process in place in Washington required some spending reduction to make way budgetarily for this continuation of the Trump tax cuts. One of those areas that we really focused on is in Medicaid and the reform of Medicaid, and New Mexico is heavily reliant on Medicaid. We do that, take advantage of that, because we get a 3-for-1 match from the federal government. So when New Mexico spends a dollar on Medicaid, and this is the program for the poor, Medicare is for the elderly, although a lot of elderly do get Medicaid.
Did you just call me elderly?
No, I did not. I don't know if you're on Medicare, but if you are, yes, I guess I am on Medicare. So there you go. And you know, there's a whole different area to discuss and reform there. But the point is that one of the things that they reformed in this proposal is provider taxes. Now you say to yourself, well, what the heck is a provider tax? Well, basically, it is a way that states, including New Mexico, have gamed the Medicaid system to increase the amount of money flowing from Washington, D.C. to the state of New Mexico and other states that have done this. And one of the things that I point out is that the concern about this procedure and this process is bipartisan. Now, in 2024, New Mexico's legislature passed a provider tax on hospitals that helped the state of New Mexico access an additional $1.5 billion with a B dollars from Medicaid. In the recent legislative session, the size of Medicaid and that budget passed at $15.5 billion, which is a third bigger than the general fund budget of $10.8 billion. So Medicaid is eating, literally, state budgets, especially here in New Mexico, where we kind of pass out Medicaid like it's candy at Halloween. So to bring all this home, Joe Biden was quoted by Bob Woodward. This is when he was vice president, but he said, "It's a scam." Biden agreed. The states were gaming the system, taxing doctors and hospitals so they could get federal reimbursements and then returning the money to the providers. Let's call it like it is, and let's just do this. If we can do this, come on. You can just hear Joe Biden. Come on, man. Well, I agree with Joe Biden, maybe not for the first and only time in my life, but definitely in this particular case, he is spot on about the scam of these provider taxes. Now, there's other ways that Medicaid is being reformed. For example, a work requirement. Ooh, you got to work 80 hours a month. That's 20 hours a week to receive Medicaid benefits. And it doesn't have to be a paying job. It could be job training or education. So there's ways around even that as a work requirement. But this is why we are seeing our governor and our progressive congressional delegation really freaking out, not because it's going to impact our health outcomes. That's very indeterminate. And the state of New Mexico could step in, by the way, with some of that war chest of $61 billion that we're sitting on and actually pick up the slack if we wanted to. If it was a priority for the state, we have the resources to do it. But it has become very much part of New Mexico's culture, especially among our political officials, to consider Washington, D.C. as a cash cow that we can just tap into and bring home the bacon. And I mean, this is going back. If you want bipartisan discussion of that, Pete Domenici was known in Washington when he was a U.S. senator, a Republican, for bringing home the so-called bacon. Nothing is new. And we can debate whether the merits of the bacon and whether it's good or bad and blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying that taking advantage of Washington, D.C., and specifically the taxpayers in the other 49 states is a long New Mexico tradition. I think it needs to stop, partially because we do have $61 billion that we're sitting on. Preferably, I would say, cut the taxes, develop our private sector economy, bring our poverty rates down, improve our economic diversification, and make New Mexico a more successful state. In the absence of that, if we really are concerned about the health and well-being of New Mexicans losing Medicaid, and there will be some numbers that do, we have money to address the problem right here at the state level. In fact, that $2 billion we talked about in the last legislative session, in the 2025 session, the legislature unanimously, at least in the Senate, I don't know, I know it passed, but set aside $2 billion for a Medicaid trust fund in case something were to happen. But that's just a drop in the bucket if we really want to make healthcare a priority at the state level. Now,
Paul, isn't the real question, though, that Medicaid is actually goes to a lot of people that are in this country, in the state, illegally?
I would say that is one issue of Medicaid, but it is by no means the only issue. And we've done a pretty deep dive in terms of analyzing immigration patterns and New Mexico. And let's just say that New Mexico is not as much of a hotbed of immigration, legal or otherwise, as many of our neighbors, because something that Trump and people who are pretty anti-immigration and people who are pro-immigration both recognize that many of these people do want to move here for various work opportunities. There's obviously criminals and whatnot, and those are a separate conversation. But we don't have a great deal of those types of people in New Mexico. There are more in other states, especially like Arizona and Texas and whatnot, where the job market's better, where the economy is diversified, and there's more opportunities for those people. But regardless, that's not the only problem. And there are aspects of the Big Beautiful Bill that address some of those issues with illegal immigrants getting these government benefits. So that is something that is worth doing for sure.
Paul will be with us one more segment. We're going to start our next segment with New Mexico health outcomes continue to fail despite massive spending. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect.
Paul Gessing with us on ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams sitting in again for Steve Ryman. We'll have Paul till 2 o'clock. And again, I wish we could get to all 13 of the topics we put down here. But if you want to know more about each one of the things going on at errorsofenchantment.com, Paul, I find the way you format this very informative, and you don't have to spend like hours. You can go review a couple of these topics a week, and you're pretty well caught up with things that are going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, we try to make things as user-friendly and as simple as possible for average citizens, media outlets, whoever wants to access this information. I do wish the New Mexico media were a little more receptive and or willing to call what I'll politely call BS from our political establishment, because they tend to report on this big, beautiful bill in Washington as just the worst thing that's ever happened to New Mexico, throwing moms and babies out on the streets and depriving them of their health care and giving massive resources to the top 1%, et cetera, et cetera. The situation is a lot more nuanced. And that doesn't even mean that we are huge supporters of every aspect of that bill in Washington. And obviously it is a federal piece of legislation, so we're not really lobbying or actively engaged with our congressional delegation, which we know is not going to support this thing. But I do think it is worth noting that there are a lot of positives in this bill that need to be discussed in a way that's a lot more nuanced than what the traditional media outlets tend to do, especially when you have kind of this one-party political dominance in the state of New Mexico that we have.
Again, is there anybody that could get everybody together, both parties? I mean, could we actually have a session of Congress, both the House and the Senate, that sits down and discusses 10 topics like we are today, and they got to come up with some bipartisan or nonpartisan plan that's the best they can come up with and just do it? Or, you know, it's, I asked you the question at the beginning of the last segment. Uh-huh. I said, would you acknowledge when somebody else has a good idea? To us, I think in the public, we see that a Republican is never going to acknowledge that a good idea came out of the Democrat side and vice versa. And I just find that is impossible, because in every other aspect of life, from business to sports to growing up in a classroom and in our school system, you got to get along. You got to get things done. You have to accomplish things together, regardless of how you feel about things.
Ooh, bipartisanship. I don't know, honestly, if that is something that we can really see happen in this state, or nation for that matter. It's not something that has always been easily done. I mean, you can go back, and of course, you know, all the way back to the founding, you know, Adams and Jefferson, who happened to both die on the same July 4th, I want to say 1824, but I could be wrong on that number. They were the originators, progenitors of modern political parties that we have today. Now, partisanship has definitely gotten worse, especially in Washington, D.C. There's too many reasons to go into. I would say that a big one is the media and social media aspect, where it is the goal of more members of Congress to put out a snappy video online or some kind of burn tweet that can get people on the other side. And that's obviously, you know, the President of the United States does this thing all the time. So this is by no means a partisan issue. This is definitely bipartisan. But to get people together, unfortunately, I think things have to get really bad. And I would point to Argentina as an example of what can happen if, when things get really bad, you move towards a pro-freedom, pro-limited government mentality and policy solution. That doesn't always happen. We've had situations in this country, the Great Depression is a great example, and we, instead of moving towards more freedom, decided to embrace more government. And I think that
Well, Paul, you've even used the word socialism. And
yeah.
Has socialism ever worked anywhere in the world?
No, it has not. And Milei in Argentina, the head of that country, has dramatically transformed that country away from its previous socialist policies, dating all the way back to Perón and his country falling down. Now, the United States under FDR, we embraced and dramatically expanded the role of government that was somewhat, you know, kind of the Republicans fought against aspects of that. But New Mexico and the Democratic Party has been much more focused on expanding upon that, those government programs. And that's really, I think, ultimately a philosophical difference in the way our political parties operate in the real world. So, I mean, for things to, you know, the United States is obviously heavily in debt, and that would be where I think we might see the opportunity for some movement towards a more free market position. At the state of New Mexico, we have so much money from the oil and gas industry that unless that changes, unless that money goes away, it's going to be a little bit tough for reformers to kind of come in and say, all right, we're going to do things much, much differently. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it is a real challenge that oil and gas money provides kind of a security blanket for the political leadership of our state. Unfortunately,
hey, I'm just going to call out the faith community listening right now. We need to be praying for the political leadership. And
absolutely.
I mean, praying for people that you don't agree with necessarily.
Yeah. There's no doubt we all need to pray and obviously vote and do everything we can in our power to make sure that the people we elect do the right thing in accordance with the Bible and you know, sound public policy that embraces the importance of the individual in our world.
Paul, we've got about 3 minutes left, so I'm sorry not
no
to
problem.
Leave you a whole lot of time here, but our listeners can go to errorsofenchantment.com. Look up this report, New Mexico Health Outcomes Fail to Improve Despite Massive Spending Increase. What's that about?
Well, we just talked about Medicaid a few moments ago and a massive amount of spending growth that's happened in Medicaid. And some of this dates back to the Obamacare expansion of Medicaid. But in general, we as a state and as a nation have done a lot to expand government's role in healthcare. And this is from Source New Mexico. This is a left-wing news source right here in New Mexico. And they talk about how our healthcare outcomes have not improved or continue to fail or fall, even while we have pumped more and more money into these government programs. And I actually put out on Twitter, there was a Albuquerque Journal headline recently, and it was on a related subject. It was about behavioral health, which this all came from a meeting in Taos, the Legislative Finance Committee, which is kind of the green eyeshade folks up in the legislature. Last Thursday, the Albuquerque Journal headline was, "Increase in New Mexico behavioral health spending has yet to deliver results." And I said, that's an evergreen headline in New Mexico. And it's both healthcare and behavioral health. We're spending more money. We're pumping money in these government programs. But to what end? We need to restore those dollars to we the people, not more government.
Paul, amazing always to visit with you. God bless you on your trip to Washington. Hope you have a great 4th. Thank you, everybody, for listening today to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.